This sound was recorded on the 30th of August, 1962. Sister Mrs. Connacher, medium Leslie Flint. That's all correct. I just...
If you might, just...
Well, I've started it, so we'll be on the series.
Yes. How's little Tina getting on?
She's getting on fine.
Good. Lived a very live little creature.
She is.
Do you take her when you go for walks?
Well, until she's been inoculated or injected or whatever it is they do, we're not taking her out into the streets. We let her roam in the garden, but if we go anywhere to friends, we take her with us.
Yes. Well, I think it's nice to have an animal about the place, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Although I'm afraid I gravitate towards cats more than dogs. It's just... His little voice came clearly through on the tape last time.
What, the dog?
Yes. See the light from your machines.
There is a little light.
Oh, yes.
Very minute.
And you certainly can't hear it going round.
No, it's a very quiet machine.
You'd hear mine grinding away.
Shouldn't you,
know? No, I know. It just does. Are you going to the wireless exhibition?
No, my friend's been, so it's very disappointing.
Is that so?
I'm fed up with those exhibitions. They're all the same every year, practically. You know, all the same sort of idea. They get a bit boring and very tiring.
Yes, well, living here, I expect you've seen the trains crowded with people going. It's the last day today. Thank you, Mickey. How nice of you to come.
I'm very well, too.
Pardon?
I am very well,
so too. So good. You always seem to be well.
You got your picture with you.
I have, yes.
I think you're very disappointed.
Yes, I am, rather. Mickey?
It isn't terribly like him, is it?
No. I'll try another one. I'll try Mr. Cochran.
Don't bother, my dear.
Really? Hello, darling.
I don't mind. In a way, whether you have it or not, it's it. And of course, I know that you would like a good picture of me, but it isn't really important. After all, you've got me, I come and talk to you, and I'm constantly with you, and after all, you've got my photographs.
Yes, I have. I've got one lovely photograph.
If it's for the book, I suggest you use the photograph. It's, after all, a good likeness.
Oh, very good, yes.
It would
yes.
be very nice to have a very good portrait, psychic portrait, to put in the book as comparison, but if this is very good, it's not much point.
No, that's quite true, darling.
Well, my dear, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How nice of you to leave your blissful abode.
Oh, I don't leave my blissful abode. In a sense, it's always with me. I'm with you, too. It's extraordinary how one can be in both worlds at the same time and be conscious of them.
Really?
I wish one could explain that. In a way, I think it's because you yourself mentally have raised yourself so much above earth conditions, at least at times when I'm near you, that it's almost as if I'm, in a sense, conscious of both worlds. Really, in a way, I am in both worlds.
Yes, like Mickey, of course. Yes.
It's difficult to explain some of these things, but I think once one can accept the idea that all life, as we understand the meaning of the term, is a mental process, it's a mental thing in itself. then I think you have some idea of it.
Yes.
You see, you are, after all, living in a mental world, although you're living in a purely physical one. It's, in a sense, really fundamentally mental. It's nothing that you do that you don't first think about. Your thoughts are very pregnant and real, and they are very much real to me, more so than they are possibly to you.
Yes, I
whereas
see.
I can link with you mentally, and to some extent you link with me mentally. In your own earthly existence, you transmit your thoughts into silence so that people know what you're thinking. At least they have some idea of what you're thinking, though even there you can only do it in a, well, sort of way which gives some indication. No one can really automatically give their thoughts out in such a way that they're 100%. In fact, so much we feel deeply within ourselves and we think we cannot express in words. Words are inadequate.
Yes.
That's what I find is the main thing communicating with you. I just find words are not sufficient, but good enough.
No, I wish we'd been taught, you know, from youth upwards to think properly. But you see, we always thought, oh, well, it's only a thought, it doesn't matter. Just a passing thought, you
yes.
see.
Well, thoughts are great realities. They are the very things by which we live.
Yes.
In fact, if it were not for thought, we couldn't exist at all. That is why we often refer to our world as a world which, although very real to us, as real to us as yours is to you and more so, actually fundamentally is thought. Everything about us is thought created. It's not something that just happens. Your world, physically, is a world in which you find yourselves, but without the capacity of thought and the power of thought, it would mean little or nothing to you. In fact, you couldn't exist in it without it. You
yes.
are nothing more or less. No person is anything more or less than their thoughts, good, bad, and indifferent. And since most people are a conglomeration of good, bad, and indifferent thoughts, that's why their lives are, as they are, complex and often very confusing. If only people could learn to think clearly on the right lines in an elevated sense, their whole lives would be different in consequence.
Yes, I quite see that. I wish we could. I wish there was a correspondence course.
Ah.
I'd take it up.
I was wondering this morning if you had any particular questions that you particularly wanted answered.
Well, have you been preparing something for me?
Well, in a sense, no. And in a sense, yes. I suppose, in a way, I always do prepare. And yet, in a sense, I'm not really fully conscious of having prepared. That may sound a paradox, but it's true.
Yes.
There are so many aspects of life, so much that one can automatically switch on, as it were, to discuss, that one doesn't have to prepare anything. Although I do naturally sometimes think, well, if I talk about so-and-so, it should be interesting and of interest to most people.
Yes.
All, you see.
Well, could you help me to visualize the scene here today? You have told me a little about direct voice, but I think others would be interested just to be able to sort of peep into this little room and see what is happening.
Well, I suppose to give a picture of the situation in which I find myself at present in trying to communicate, I first have to describe the fact that the instrument that we use, being a sensitized being, and being charged with a form of power or vitality which exudes or makes possible the exuding of what we term ectoplasm, which is a substance which can be utilized by us and solidified in such a way that it can be molded into some shape or form, very similar to the vocal organs. In other words, we build all the scientists whose job it is, and they specialize in this, in taking from the medium this substance and using it, building a replica of the vocal organs necessary for speech, which we can vibrate. After all our communication is done by vibration. The cords, the artificially reproduced cords, are vibrated in the atmosphere, which creates sound, and in consequence you hear what you term a voice, which after all are only sound waves or vibrations, and we concentrate our thought in such a way on this that it reproduces to some extent that which we are thinking. But since it is artificially created, it must must, in a sense, artificially reproduce.
Yes.
And that is why it's extremely difficult to reproduce identically the full intonation and the peculiarities of a particular voice.
Oh, but you do, darling.
Well, you say I do.
Oh, in many of the tapes. It's just like having you by my side.
But I think a lot depends, obviously, on the individual who's communicating, whether they are experienced or not. If they are experienced, they have overcome the initial complexities and difficulties, and they're able to assert their personality to such an extent that they do, no doubt, reproduce their voice to some extent as it was on earth and is recognizable as such.
Do you move your mouth and tongue, and where is the voice box?
Voice box is invariably obviously built in the auric emanation of the medium. Once it goes beyond that, it ceases to have any real function. That is why, in certain types of voice demonstrations, the trumpet is used. And although the trumpet may go well away from the medium, it's much more difficult. And in fact, if it were not for the trumpet, you wouldn't hear the voice too, because the trumpet merely enlarges the sound, for that is its main purpose anyway, but you'll find that the smaller end is invariably in the auric emanation of the medium. If it were not so, unless mods were used, which often are in that form of mediumship, to make the communication possible at a distance, it is the etheric rods which carry the sound waves to the trumpet. But the further you go away from the medium's auric emanation, the more difficult it is to hold it and to manipulate it and to make it possible to carry on a conversation.
Yes, and do I understand rightly that there are etheric chemists here who have prepared this voice box, or do you make it?
Well, I refer to them as a scientist, but actually there are various souls here whose task it is to do certain things, the chemists or the doctors or the scientists, call them what you like, because in a sense they embody the three. Their job is to keep it replenished, to keep the voice box replenished, because all the time, as soon as you're building, it's beginning to disintegrate. That is why a sound's perhaps can last only a short time. A communicator can only say so much. And if that communicator bungles things, is inclined to be rather perturbed by the whole thing and very conscious of it and complex in their outlook towards it because of inexperience, then it doesn't hold and it doesn't last and they lose the contact. That's why often guides are so essential. Who are experienced, who will transmit messages. They will, in other words, act as an interpreter. They will pass on the messages for the communicator. Sometimes, of course, they will speak in the first person, as if the person is speaking, which in a sense they are, because they're only transmitting thoughts into sound, and the guide may be transmitting them to you, the recipient, acting as an intermediary.
Yes, are there many guides here today?
There are at least, to my knowledge, 10.
Oh, really?
But you see, each one has his or her part to play. Each one is assisting with the power. Each one is given a specific work to do. And the scientists, particularly, are the ones who are manipulating and utilizing the ectoplasm, keeping the voice box rigid, or keeping it, shall we say, formed, stopping it from beginning to disintegrate. That is the main task, and the main difficulty, of course, is to keep the voice box so that it will retain sufficient solidity to last for the length of sounds to make communication possible.
Yes.
The main difficulty is doing that, because the fluidic emanation from the medium all the time is fluctuating and changing, although it is, after all, it is a living substance.
Yes.
And that is why mediumship of this nature is so rare. And also, one might also say, with equal truth, it's very dangerous. Because although it's all right for a medium to sit with people who understand and are sympathetic, it's very dangerous and very unwise for a medium of this type to sit with strangers who are inexperienced, who might, quite unconsciously even, do something which would be very detrimental to the phenomena, to the mediumship, and above all, to the medium's health. And of course it has been known for people to do foolish things.
Yes.
done so much harm to the medium and in some instances caused their sudden death. You see, you're living, all the time you must remember that you're dealing with living substances, you're dealing with living tissues even, you're dealing with a vital force, a life-giving force from the medium, and that is why anything done that is detrimental, such as switching on a light or moving suddenly, creating some disturbing element, is very bad. And of course one can do these things not always in a physical sense, but in a mental sense too.
Yes.
That is why if you have a person present who is very opposed and is setting up very bad vibrations by their thoughts, very bad atmosphere, that can be very bad. And wise guides on this side, immediately sensing that, withdraw and refuse, of course, to manifest at all.
Oh, how interesting. Now, darling, are my unseen guests today, are they in etheric robes, or how have they come?
Well, invariably, of course, when we come back to Earth, we come in our own sort of robes. In other words, over here, of course, the idea of suits or costumes or dresses, such as are common today on Earth, I don't say they're non-existent, because if a person feels that they wish to dress in that particular fashion or way, they can do so. There's nothing to stop them. But the more progressed, shall we say, the more advanced souls prefer and take upon themselves of wearing apparel which I suppose is rather reminiscent of perhaps the ancient Romans or Greeks, who sort of wear loose-fitting robes, rather like saris and the Indian women probably. The women, of course, we find that loose-fitting robes are most becoming and most befitting. And
yes, I think you look very, very nice like that, darling.
Yes.
I've heard that you resemble a Greek type of.
Well, I suppose that's as near as one could describe it. If you can imagine us in very comfortable, loose-fitting and attractive coloured robes, that's as near as you can hope to get to it.
Yes.
And of course, mind you, sometimes for personal reasons or evidential purposes, when we come to Earth, we assume a raiment which would be applicable, inasmuch that when described, would fit us as we were known when on Earth.
Yes, I see.
But that's invariably done by thought. It isn't actually that we are dressed like that. We assume that guise or that wearing apparel by thought force to give some evidential value to the communication. I mean, for instance, if your mother came, although she's a young woman now, because age is purely physical, she would think of herself as she was in remembrance towards the last years, she would say, of her life, and would think of herself in the sort of dress or wearing apparel that was common to her. For evidential reasons, not because she particularly wanted to look old or particularly wanted to wear the sort of clothes that you would expect her to be in. It's just purely done.
I don't know, it sounds a tremendous feat to be able to do that.
Well, you see, the whole point is, as I've said before, in communication, whatever form it may take, whether it is in direct voice, whether it is through a trance medium, whether it is by the clairvoyant powers of medium, or in any way in which we may endeavour to communicate, it is always, and must be, and can only be, by thought.
Yes.
And that is why, in a sense, mediumship as such can only be accepted, and can only be understood, when people realise it is a mental process. There are some people who are so prejudiced, and on your side, who say, oh, well, why go to medium? Is quite unnecessary. Why should I have to go to a medium to talk to my husband or my wife? If my wife or my husband wants to speak to me or communicate with me, they know where I live, they can come there. But it doesn't alter the fact that a person's relation, husband and wife, as the case may be, will go to the person concerned and hope to communicate. But if that person is so materially dense, I mean, if they're so sort of immersed in material things and they cannot perceive the realities of a life as spirit, and that to visualize or to see or to experience something of a spiritual nature, you must be prepared to accept it and be prepared to make it possible by your spiritual attitude of mind and a majority of people who are inclined to disclaim this truth are people who have the most narrow conceptions and invariably think that they themselves, because they are in some way related or connected to a certain person, that they should get that person themselves. But if they are not sufficiently wise to truth, to communication, if they themselves are not tuned in mentally and spiritually to make it possible, it's very rare and very difficult for the communicating entity who desires to make the contact to do so. And it's true there are people who have had visions, people who have had experiences who are not spiritualists. But then again, you don't have to be a spiritualist, you don't have to have a tag or a label to have communication. Because after all said and done, communication takes place quite often between people on this side and on yours who are not in any way spiritualistically inclined. What I'm trying to convey here is the knowledge of communication, how it works, and why it works. In other words, to know something of this truth is a great asset, because it means that your mind is freed of old, outworn creeds and dogmas. You're not tied down or held down by preconceived ideas as to what should be and what should not be. Your mind is open and free to accept. And it's only when a person's mind is open and free to accept truth that you can anticipate or hope to get it. The majority of people are so prejudiced and so built up barriers within themselves, not always their own fault, of course, but nevertheless they are definitely barriers, which are very difficult for our side to break down or to pierce. I mean, the whole of life is an illustration, I think, of this, of the barriers that man has created in so many different ways, not only between our world and yours, but between peoples in your world alone,
yes,
between nations, between peoples, between families even. In families you have this terrible sort of barrier that's built up through ignorance and foolishness and willfulness, and so much has to be changed before man can realize this truth to its fullest extent.
Yes.
Even as I talk to you, with all the knowledge that you have and the experience and the open-mindedness that you have, there are still difficulties. I wouldn't say they're insurmountable, but there are difficulties which only time possibly will make it possible to break down.
Yes, I realize that. Darling, how is your father?
Oh, my father's very well.
Do you think he could speak sometime? I'd love to hear his voice.
Very much.
I want to hear his Scottish voice.
But you see, the whole point is that they all insist on my doing the speaking. They say, after all, which is true enough, that naturally you want me to come and talk to you, and I am...
Well, it's your book,
more experience.
Yes.
I have had much more experience of communication.
Yes.
And I have so much that I want to convey that will help others.
But last time you said you would bring other souls this time.
Well, I'm hoping to, but I have got other souls here with me this morning, it's true. But I don't think somehow I should be able to do anything in regard to their speaking.
Perhaps next time.
Next time. I don't want to commit myself, but I will try.
Yeah.
But you see, at the moment, we are in the throes of doing something which I feel will be of great benefit to many, to those who are open-minded enough to inquire, and those who I hope will read our book, which will give them an insight into many aspects of this whole subject, a sensible one, because in my opinion, for what it's worth, and I think it's true to say, the vast majority of the books that have been written on this subject are a lot of piffle. There's a great deal of truth in some, and there are some excellent books, of course, but a tremendous amount of nonsense has been written, which obviously never emanated from the site at all.
No, but I think Arthur Findlay is really, my Bible. I'm so fond of him.
Well, of course, the point is that there is a man of great sense. Yeah. And susceptibility, a man of great experience, and the sort of stuff that he has written is 100%.
Of course it is.
And he's not the sort of person who will put anything down to paper, this is sure. And the vast majority of what he has written he has obtained from this side, and the rest is received by inspiration and personal experience. Those sort of books do a lot of good.
Of course they do.
But there is an enormous amount of stuff that's written that, frankly, only emanated from imagining that they were in touch. And believe me, some of the stuff that I've read and I've heard about and even been told about by people over here who, quite frankly, I just discuss it because it gives a very false picture of our life.
Yes.
There are some people who really have accepted some things that really, when analyzed, just don't make sense at all, don't hold water. Mm-hmm. You see, the point is to differentiate between so much that is given, and one must, in the first instance, be sure of the mediumship. Otherwise, you'll lay yourself open to all sorts of errors.
Yes.
You see, we must accept the fact that this is a subject which can, in the wrong hands, be misinterpreted. And there are so many people who, probably quite well-meaning, of course, have thought they were in touch, whereas actually it's merely their vivid imagination running riot.
Yes.
Anyway, we don't do so badly, do we, darling?
Very well, thank you,
darling.
You know,
sometimes, although I'm anxious to get on with this work and do our book and perhaps even other books, who knows, I still can't resist sometimes the feeling how nice it would be if you were coming over here very soon, but I don't see an indication of that. You're so damned healthy.
Oh, looks
to me if you're going on for years.
Oh.
Still, it'll give us opportunity to serve and help
out. Oh, I don't feel at all ready to come over, darling.
No,
I think there's a great gulf fixed.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Because you just don't realize how much you have progressed in the last few years. You've made tremendous progress. Mm-hmm. Much more than you'll ever realize when you're on Earth. The links between us are so strengthened, so strong. We're so much in tune, so much in harmony. And you receive a tremendous amount from me mentally. You may not see me. You may not hear my voice in the home. But believe me, I am there very, very often. And very much that I try to give you, you do receive.
Yes, I heard three words the other morning. I'm by you.
Yes.
Did you say those? Or
yes, I did. Mm-hmm. And many other words too, which obviously you didn't catch. But we don't lose a bear, do we?
No, very well.
I'm so thrilled.
Thank
by
you,
this
darling.
Book. And you must be patient with me because there's so much that I've got to convey to you that will take time. And I can only do it in bits, you know.
Yes, of course.
But I wish I could give you a big hug and kiss while I go.
Yes.
With all my love and blessings,
yes.
And I'll speak to you again soon.
Yes.
I'll be coming in a week or two, I suppose.
2 weeks. And
yes.
Please try and bring somebody as well, will you?
Bring a father.
Well, it's just to get the contrast in voices.
All
people
right.
Would be rather amused.
I will.
I'd love a Scottish voice.
All right, but I'm not out to amuse people.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I'll give you this
voice.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Mickey.
I said the wrong word then.
I did. Oh, dear, oh, dear. My word, they're wonderfully up to date. Oh, they're on the spot all the time.
That's amused.